Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi.
I feel like we're usually talking about work or school when it comes to improving our executive function skills, but there's another part of our lives that we use them in too. Creative hobbies. Whether you enjoy painting, sewing, writing songs, knitting, or any other creative outlet, it is important to realize that the skills you learned in your work or school can apply to these other areas of your life too. Today, I'm going to take a look at how our EF skills both support our creativity and how our creative hobbies can support the development of our EF skills. This topic is especially important to me because being creative has always been a big part of my life. And in addition to helping my coaching clients with their EF skills and some of those skills related to their own creativity, I own a small business with my friend Bonnie. We teach embroidery, sewing, and other fiber arts crafts to kids and adults. Bonnie and I see the immense value of creativity all the time in our students and in ourselves. I think that that value is much greater than we as a society give it. In my research for this episode, I found many studies that support the idea that creative hobbies are beneficial for our brains, our happiness, and our life and work satisfaction. You can find out more about these studies in the show notes. And I just wanted to mention that I'm calling them creative hobbies today, but I know that they're not hobbies for some people. And for some of those people, their creativity provides financial support. But many of the studies I read called them creative hobbies, so that's the words I'm going with today. Back to the value of being creative, what we invest in these hobbies often yields abundant returns. As we know, prioritizing our self-care is crucial for brain health and optimizing those executive function skills we use every day in all aspects of our lives. Engaging in these creative pursuits not only strengthens these skills, but also serves as an enjoyable form of self-care. It's a dynamic duo, folks. It is. I know I'm a super nerd about EF skills, but I do think it is pretty cool about how many EF skills are involved in creative hobbies. Whether it's a meal, a song, or a sweater, you're strengthening your EF skills from beginning to end, or to the middle if you're like me and sometimes don't actually finish what you started. Here's a quick list of each EF skill and the roles they play in our creative endeavors. Cognitive flexibility. This is helpful if you're trying something new or need to solve a problem that arises in the middle of a project. Planning and prioritizing. We use these skills to come up with some kind of plan for when and how we'll do everything and for making choices about what we need to do versus what we want to do. You know, when you'd rather sew instead of making dinner. Time management is figuring out when you're going to work on it and estimating how long each step will take. And then organization, we use this to help us manage our supplies before, during, and after our project. And impulse control and self-control helps us to take the time to look to see what supplies we already have instead of just rushing out to the store and buying everything listed. And we also use these skills to make sure that we read the directions or the pattern instead of just jumping right in without any prep. Attention is used to pay attention to those instructions, pay attention to our surroundings, make sure we don't hurt ourselves, and pay attention to how our craft is impacting our bodies or our lives outside of our creativity. And then task initiation helps us get started on the project, and it helps us clean up after creating. Emotional regulation helps us regulate our emotions while we're working, and that can help us get through tough challenges instead of abandoning it out of frustration. And then reflection or metacognition, you know, looking back on how it went, what worked, what didn't work, what can you change for next time? How can you make it better? And sometimes our brains and challenges with these EF skills can get in the way of being creative. If you have ADHD, it can really get in the way of creative motivation. You may want to be creative, but you can't for some reason. Here is my fellow EF coach, Amy McDuffie, talking about how motivation is impacted by an ADHD brain. You'll hear her mention kids, but just remember that the same science applies to adult brains too.
ADHD is associated with lower levels of the neurotransmitters dopamine and norepinephrine. And this changes how the ADHD brain perceives both reward and pleasure, which causes a lack of enthusiasm for starting or completing tasks. So this might be one reason you have difficulty with motivation if you have ADHD. And this can also mean that kids with ADHD experience much more frustration and failure than they do success, which has a negative impact on their self-perception and also increases stress. So this can become a real barrier to getting started. It can become a self-reinforcing negative cycle and also results in less efficient processing because all that stress just makes the brain shut down. And another big difference in the ADHD brain involves the brain structure called the default mode network, which is the part of the brain that activates when we're daydreaming or not focused on a task or activity. And when the brain is directed towards a task or goal, the default network deactivates. But in ADHD, this part of the brain is more often activated, which leads to your focus constantly being pulled away from what you're doing in the moment and toward completely unrelated thoughts. So that explains why staying focused on really tedious or repetitive tasks can be such a chore with ADHD.
On the opposite end of the motivation spectrum, ADHD brains can also hyper-focus on something we're really into. So that can be why you might really, really want to get started on something or be able to persevere for a long time on something creative that you're just really passionate about. But when this interest wanes, maybe we leave something unfinished because now it's almost painful to try to work on it. Everyone's experience is different, so your mileage may vary, but I'll bet that most people, regardless of any neurodivergence, can relate to some aspects of these extremes in motivation. All right, brain stuff is done. I hope it helps you have some compassion for yourself when you struggle to get started, keep going, or finish something, or when your partner or your friend does, if you're listening to learn because you love someone creative who also struggles with EF skills. So let's look at some practical strategies you can try to see if we can make it a little easier to get through these things. I can't promise I'll make you painlessly and gloriously productive, but I will hopefully be able to help clear the path to your finished project. And while there are many, many aspects of this topic that I could explore, I am going to limit it to three for today. First up, big challenge for many people, perfectionism. Then we'll take a look at the related topics of emotion regulation, persevering through challenges, and expanding our window of tolerance. And then last, I'll share some ideas on how to fit being creative into your already busy lives and some tips and strategies that might make it easier to prioritize, plan, get going, and then actually finish. All right, so first up, let's talk about perfectionism. A desire to reach perfection when we're being creative can make it difficult to finish whatever we're creating, or it can even stop us from getting started. Bonnie is the designer in the small business that we own together, and she has been an artist for most of her life. She's incredibly talented, and along with that, she's really struggled with perfectionism until fairly recently. I knew she would be a great person to ask about this as we talk about it often. Listen now to hear how Bonnie has grown as a person and she's learned about herself in her journey through and away from perfectionism. Hey, Bonnie.
Hey, Hannah.
So as you and I both know, you are a recovering perfectionist. You're working on that. And so I wanted to ask you a couple questions. So how did you practice tolerating that discomfort that you feel when something isn't perfect?
Well, first, it was important for me to recognize the fact that handmade is not meant to be perfect. And strangely enough, even though I've been creating my whole life practically, I didn't realize that until fairly recently when we met and we started creating together. So that's the first thing, is that it's not supposed to be perfect. So just having that, being okay with that made a big difference. The second thing was like being able to ask for feedback because we are our own worst critics. So it's really helpful to get another perspective and see, like, is this really that big of a deal? And if it's not, you know, it's easier to let it go. Another thing that's helpful is to sleep on it, like just to look at it again with fresh eyes the next day. And, you know, maybe what you saw the night before is not so bad in the morning. You can kind of live with it, you know, it's fine. But the other thing that I've really learned is that if you do want to change it, if you do want to fix it, it's okay too. Because that was the other thing I felt is as recovering perfectionist, I had this like, I was very motivated to not go back and be so perfect. But then I also realized I have to still live with this work and I have to be proud of it and happy with it. So it's totally okay if I decide I can't live with it and I do want to fix it. I don't have to feel any kind of shame or guilt in doing that. So just like honoring my own like goals and feelings about making that artwork. The other thing, I guess, is like age, like, as you age, you grow more confident in your work, and it doesn't matter as much what other people think. So that also helped me to let go. I wasn't worrying so much about the people-pleasing aspect of it. I was really doing it for myself and really being able to enjoy it.
I love all that. I love that I got to witness a lot of that change for you.
You were instrumental in a lot of that change. Aww. So thank
I'm so
you.
So glad. You're welcome. Yeah, it's so important that what you said about the whole shame. There's no shame in wanting to go back and make something perfect. And, you know, when we are creating things, we are putting them out there usually for the world to see. And so that's a really vulnerable position to put yourself in. And so it is okay to go back and make it as good as you can. And just learning how, like, where that line is, where to draw that line, and where the perfectionism is going to get in the way of your creating, or where your desire for really good mm-hmm. is going to lift up your work and make it better. So it's a kind of a fine balance that you have to find.
Right. I like that, the reframe of it. It's not perfect. It's not that it's making it perfect, but it's making it really good.
Yeah.
Like yeah. you know, like just so.
Yes. So what benefits have you seen in your life from this kind of changing that reframe, changing your approach to your artistic work?
Yeah, just being able to enjoy the process so much more. It's much less stressful, and you really just get to feel all those benefits that you get. I mean, there's a lot of brain science behind that, being creative and being able to just have a practice that allows you to do that is so important. So when you're not hindered by that fear, like that perfection paralysis part of it, it's huge. It really does just let all those creative juices flow much more freely.
Mm-hmm. And that it does help when you are not creating for, like when you're creating for yourself is a great time to practice that. And then hopefully some of that will carry over to when you are creating for, you know, like for some, like someone who's commissioned you to make something for them.
Right.
But I think the practice of it when you're doing it for yourself probably does benefit you when you are making something for someone else.
Absolutely. I also think it's important if you do it for your business or your job, in addition for your own pleasure, that when you're doing it for yourself, to find something that allows you to create more freely. Like, for example, in sewing garments, there's a lot of precision involved. So maybe save that for times when, you know, you have to be on point, and choose, like, I really love embroidery, freehand embroidery, and not cross stitch, because cross stitch requires you to count and be, again, very precise and have to be really mindful. But embroidery for me feels more like doodling with thread. And so it's a little more intuitive and more relaxing. So just like choose a practice that lets you kind of just chill with it and not have to be quite so precise.
And yet it's still a practice. It's still giving you that opportunity to say, like, hey, it's okay that this didn't come out exactly how I wanted it. It still looks pretty amazing.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Bonnie.
You're welcome. Thank you, Hannah.
Bonnie also wanted me to add that looking at projects as learning opportunities has been really helpful in living with the discomfort of imperfections or what otherwise could be considered mistakes. And check out our episode 11 on procrastination and our webinar on managing failure. There are a lot of super helpful tips in those two resources, and you can find the links to those in the show notes. The EF skills of cognitive flexibility and metacognition play a big role in seeing these mistakes or failures as opportunities. They also help us to see the not so apparent benefits that we're receiving from our creative hobbies. In my research for this episode, I was reminded of the Japanese concept of wabi-sabi. In her book, Wabi Sabi, A Japanese Wisdom for a Perfect Imperfect Life, Beth Kempton wrote, "Put simply, wabi-sabi gives you permission to be yourself. It encourages you to do your best, but not make yourself ill in pursuit of an unattainable goal of perfection. It gently motions you to relax, slow down, and enjoy your life. And it shows you that beauty can be found in the most unlikely of places, making every day a doorway to delight." I just love that. And a really good thing to keep in mind when you're creating. Or actually in any part of your life. All right, so next up, let's talk about some emotion regulation and tolerating the frustrations that we might encounter. Engaging in creative hobbies can bring a lot of joy to our lives, but for some people, they can also cause stress. Factors like that perfectionism I just talked about, the cost of supplies and materials, deadlines, and self-doubt can add a lot of pressure. Strengthening the EF skill of emotion regulation can help us find the satisfaction and happiness that all those studies I mentioned before say we can get from being creative. Our window of tolerance, coined by Dr. Dan Siegel, is our optimal zone of emotion regulation. When we are within our window, we can tolerate stressors well, regulate those emotions, and maintain the use of our EF skills. The size of our window depends on many things: our life experiences, whether or not we have experienced trauma, our own bodies and brains, our temperaments, and the support we have in our lives. Widening our window of tolerance helps us persevere through tough creative challenges. This is where that self-care can make a huge difference. In my research on the window of tolerance, I learned that there are four major categories of care that work together to keep our windows open. You can find more about this in the show notes, but I'll talk about it briefly now. First, we need to provide our body with supportive self-care. And this means, you know, we're getting enough sleep, we're getting enough exercise, eating nutritious foods, avoiding those unhelpful behaviors, and taking care of our medical health. Next up, we're providing our minds with supportive experiences, opportunities for mental stimulation and also focus and engagement, adequate amount of rest, spaciousness, and play. And I have to say, creative hobbies fit super well into this category. Third, we're providing ourselves with supportive experiences. So being in a connected relationship or having strong friendships and being connected to something bigger than ourselves. This could be spirituality, but it can also be nature. And you may be able to find friends through your creative hobby by joining a group, either in person or online, related to it. And then you're supporting your team. And last, we're tending to our physical environment to set ourselves up for success. Living and working in places and ways that reduce stressors instead of increasing them helps, and designing the spaces we're in to be as nourishing as possible. We can even surround ourselves with the results of our creativity by hanging our work on the wall, wearing the clothes we've made, or listening to a song we've written. It's amazing. And as I mentioned in the beginning, what is so cool is that creative hobbies can play a huge part in the widening of our window. Simply through creative practice, we are strengthening our emotion regulation and widening our window of tolerance, which then, in return, benefits our creative practice. It's a win-win, my crafty friends. I fully recognize that it is nearly impossible to be amazing at prioritizing everything in these four categories, but giving some attention to even just one can help. So why not have it be your creativity? Okay, so If our windows of tolerance are wide open, our cognition is being very flexible, we're taking care of ourselves, and we've dealt with our perfectionism, what are some practical things we can do to either get started, keep going, or finish those creative adventures we find ourselves on? Pretty much all of the EF skills come into play when we're getting creative, as I explained earlier, but let's take some time to look at these three: planning, prioritizing, and time management. You may not need to do these things, practice these, but if you're struggling, taking time to set up some systems related to these skills can really help. Okay, so planning is up first. Planning can seem really annoying, but it truly can save you so much time and frustration. The first part of planning is reading through the directions or pattern for your project. There's a funny activity in the show notes called directions practice if you want to test out the importance of this. Planning can also help you figure out what supplies you already have and what you'll need to get. If the cost of materials is adding stress to your life, planning can really alleviate some of that. And look around for free or inexpensive options. Buy Nothing Groups or Marketplace on Facebook or thrift stores in your local community are often treasure troves of creative supplies. And as you may have heard me explain before, the STM tool is one of my absolute favorites and is a super effective way of breaking down big tasks into smaller steps. I highly recommend using an STM as a way to manage especially large creative projects. To create an STM, which, by the way, stands for Steps, Sequence, Time, and Mapping, you write down all the steps involved in your project, and you can get as granular as you'd like here, and then figure out their sequence, make some guesses about how much time you'll need for each, and then map out when you'll do them. Be sure to consider everything else you have going on in your life at the time, and maybe even build in some buffer time at the end in case you're working on something with a deadline. Try to be honest with yourself and realistic about how much you're likely to get done in a day. I always ask, is this a reasonable amount of work I'm asking myself to do at this time? Prioritizing also plays a big role in making our creative hobbies easier to start and finish. We need to look at the commitments we have in our lives and see where creating can fit in. Sometimes we may have to make choices that we don't like. It may require setting boundaries within ourselves and with others. And if you're working on a commissioned project or a gift, or if your creativity is for your work or it's volunteer related, you may be required to create even when your motivation wanes. And in these situations, it's really essential to strike a balance between honoring these commitments that we've made and preserving our mental health. Motivation challenges are natural for everyone at times. And taking some time to reorient ourselves to why we're doing the work can help us find an internal drive to create. Whatever the reason you create, ask yourself often why you're doing it. And if you can't come up with a good reason, it may be time to consider if it's worth doing anymore. Time management struggles can also get in the way of creative productivity. Time yourself to learn how long certain steps take you. I just used this yesterday when I was sewing a blanket. I know a certain step in the process takes me just under 15 minutes, so I knew I had time to fit this step in before I had to leave the house. I was super motivated to get it done within that window of time, and then this saved me so much time later. So setting realistic time expectations and boundaries with the people that you've committed to and to yourself, and giving yourself some extra time by starting sooner than you think you'll need to when possible. And when you learn about your own time management skills, including how long it takes you to do things, it really makes it easier to do all this planning and prioritizing. Before I go, I wanted to share that I recently had a coaching session with an adult client of mine who shared that she had had a breakthrough on a creative sewing project. She's making a baby quilt for a friend and had been struggling to get going on it. She did some reflection on why she was having trouble, and she realized that she needed help with her design because she wanted to do something unique and just wasn't sure where to start. This reminded me of a great strategy that can be useful in all stages of a project. Ask yourself, what would make this easier? Sometimes it's asking for help. Sometimes it's making it simpler. Sometimes it's accepting that this project is just not right for you at this moment in time and setting it aside, where it will wait patiently for you to pick it up someday, or not. And with that, we are at the end of today's episode. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen. We learned that through creative hobbies, we use and strengthen our EF skills, which then lead to greater benefits in other areas of our lives. EF skill development doesn't have to just be done in work or school. We can practice them with the fun, creative stuff too. Please share this episode with the crafty people in your life. We are so grateful to everyone who has already shared Focus Forward. Word of mouth keeps us alive. If you have any questions or topic suggestions, you can reach out to me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. You can subscribe to Focus Forward on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And we'd love it if you could leave us a review. You can sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. And our patient and kind editor and producer is Sean Potts. And our brilliant content marketer is Justice Abbott. And very, very big, huge thanks to my business partner, Bonnie Liang, for joining me for that conversation. And to Amy McDuffie for sharing her knowledge about ADHD and the brain. Thanks for listening. And I hope you are all able to find the benefits of creative hobbies.